Greetings and welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're talking about classical education. Pastor Joel Brondos is our guest. A model of education that was, well, not just a standard, probably the standard for education in Western civilization for the better part of the history of Western civilization. Well, of late, not only has the method become virtually unknown in educational circles, or just a matter of history, but also the purpose behind a civil education has changed radically as well. That established there in our first hour's conversation with Pastor Joel Brondos, a good picture of what classical education is and isn't. We invite your questions and comments as we continue this conversation. Pastor Joel Brondos is headmaster-elect of St. Paul Lutheran Church in and School in Brookfield, Illinois. He spent 9 years as headmaster of Zion Lutheran Academy in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Join our conversation, 1-800-730-2727, 1-800-730-2727. We have one free phone line, 1-800-730-2727. And as usual, our in-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org. The listeners with the best question or comment will get the book Classical Education Toward the Revival of American Schooling during this hour of the program. Let's go back to the phones. Joel calls from St. Louis. Joel, thank you for waiting, and welcome to Issues Etc.
Hello, Todd.
Hi.
Pastor Brondos, I was wondering if you could explain the major differences between a classical seminary education versus a typical undergraduate education.
Okay, it's a very good question, Joel. He's talking here now about not just secondary education, but really postgraduate education, typical seminary education. Give him an explanation, if you would.
Well, I think that I think things have changed over the years. I've been a pastor for about 21 years now, and it was emphasized early on in the Lutheran circles that a pastor would get a liberal arts education. That meant, when I went to college, that it wasn't just a Bible college. I wasn't just studying about the Bible and facts and so forth and about how to preach, but also I had to take some math classes and some science classes that I didn't do real well at, but I got an appreciation for those things more so. I think by the time one gets to the seminary, there's several different aspects of the question, I guess. I think our seminaries really need a stronger course in teaching. I am teaching how to teach. We had a great course with Dr. Wayne Schmidt at the time, but I'm not sure how things are progressing in St. Louis, and I have seen the aspect of it here in Fort Wayne with many of the other fine classes they teach. I think they could do a little bit more in teaching how to teach this art. But I think should be a real emphasis in this liberal arts education at the seminary of being able to be very well read, to be able to read a wide variety of things, but also then to focus on particular doctrinal issues as well.
Brooke calls from Festus, Missouri. Brooke, welcome to Issues Etc.
Hello. We are going to start homeschooling our fourth grader this year who's been in public schools, and we are interested in the classical approach, and we wanted to know how would we start going about that.
That's a very big question, Brooke, and it's probably one that's becoming more and more common. So parents homeschooling after public school, where do they begin, Joel?
Well, there are several different, you should check in her neighborhood there too, associations of homeschoolers, both locally and nationally. I believe there's a Lutheran group called the Martin Loopers, a very good group that share resources with one another. But there are also several, quite a number of books probably you can find at the library, but there's one in particular called Designing Your Own Classical Curriculum. The name of the author escapes me just at the moment. If I can just look around my office, perhaps it'll come to me a little bit later.
So is this something common, Pastor Brondos, that people who are opting for homeschooling, as one aspect of Brooke's question, are also saying, you know, it's more than just getting the kids home and getting the education under the parental control. It's also a change in the philosophy and the method as well.
Absolutely. And what parents are able to do sometimes, and a half a day's worth of homeschooling is more than what many schools can accomplish in a full day. Another group that comes to my mind that you can check on the internet is Trivium Pursuit. It's a classical emphasis for homeschoolers, and they have some very nice resources there too.
One other question. We talk about how I'm the product of anything but a classical education, and much of what I've learned has been purely remedial. Does a parent like me, would someone like me be capable of homeschooling with a classical model, given the fact that I have no background in the classical model?
I think very much so, and I think the way it can happen is if you want to do it a little bit more deliberate way. There's some very nice little articles that Dr. Gene Edward Veith Jr. had produced, titled Renaissance, Not Reform, the same organization, I believe, that published those, as did the book that I think you're promoting now. But I think parents just need to be able to take some time to read. Turn off the TV and read a book like Five Equations to Change the World. They're a narrative. You think reading a book on math would be terribly boring, but it absolutely isn't. This particular book, for example, tells the lives of mathematicians and how they came to make their mathematical discoveries. Very fascinating and very interesting, and it makes for good conversational material, too. So I think once parents start doing some reading on their own, or they might read a book like James Lowen's Lies My Teacher Taught Me, there are things that draw us into these subject areas that we start to get an education like we never got when we were going to school.
Philip calls from Springfield, Missouri. Philip, thank you for waiting. Welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hello. I enjoy this program especially. I was curious about the author of the book on classical education that you're promoting on this program, and if you could provide names and authors of the other books on classical education.
Now, the book that we're talking about, that we're giving away to our best callers here, Philip, is called Classical Education Toward the Revival of American Schooling, and it's by two individuals, one just mentioned by our guest, Pastor Brandos, Dr. Gene Edward Veith, and the other author there is Andrew Kern with a K, and it's published by Capital Research Center. Dr. Gene Edward Veith and Andrew Kern, Classical Education, published by the Capital Research Center. And I'm sure there are many others. I've got probably three or four sitting on my shelf because the subject's been the subject for the show as well there. Pastor Brandos, any other resources and names to center our listeners on this subject?
There are quite a few. I'll just try to narrow it down because there are the areas, for example, you know, maybe teaching methodology, but I think it's very important to understand the history of education. So I would say somebody like Elwood Cubberley is very interesting. He has a two-volume set that gives not only the history but also primary sources for that history. E.D. Hirsch's The Schools We Need and Why We Don't Have Them is a good overview of things. But then again, I would emphasize reading books in a particular subject area that focus on getting a broader perspective. And finally, I would, maybe two other things. I would hardly recommend Luther's educational treatises, his sermon on keeping children in school and his letter to the magistrates that they establish and maintain Christian schools. But then don't forget the classical authors also, and Luther was so well read in these as well, sort of reading Quintilian and Plutarch, Terence, some of these others that make for great reading.
That is one of the things. I am a big amateur fan of biography. I love to read biography. In fact, it's the only thing I read apart from the research that I do for this program, really for pleasure, reading biography. Usually people of not so recent history. But even going back 100 years, the men who led this country, the significant figures in Western civilization, almost to a person, knew more of classical, the classics of Western literature, just as a matter of their ordinary education, than I think anyone. They would be probably qualified to teach classics in any college nowadays with just their ordinary education in those great works of Western civilization.
Sure.
Someone might say, look, this is kind of an elitist pursuit. How would you respond to that criticism?
Well, elitist suggests that it's only for a few and not for all. I'd like to quote Robert Maynard Hutchins's dictum that the best education for the best is the best education for all. Hutchins and I may not agree on every point of education, but I think the point is well taken. We aren't trying to produce an elitist education, but this classical education should be for everybody, and it certainly is attainable by everybody in the younger stages.
Brooke, if you would call us back, you called just a little while ago, 1-800-730-2727. I'm going to send you a copy of this book, Classical Education, Toward the Revival of American Schooling. Our conversation with Pastor Joel Brondos on classical education will continue after this break. We've got a very short amount of time here, but time to take one more phone call with the answer on the other side. Daryl calls from Kansas. Daryl, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Yes. I live in Abbeville, Kansas, which is the closest big towns is Hutchinson, McPherson, and Wichita. And my son's been in the Lutheran school at Haven, Kansas, and I'm wanting to know if there's a classical school that we can send him to, since they no longer go, well, he's in the fourth grade and they don't go to fifth grade.
That's a very good question. When we come back from this break, we'll see if our guest, Pastor Joel Brondos, has an answer for Daryl's question. We'll take the rest of your phone calls as well, 1-800-730-2727. Pastor Joel Brondos is headmaster-elect of St. Paul's Lutheran Church and School in Brookfield, Illinois, and he spent 9 years as the headmaster of Zion Lutheran Academy in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Our call-in number, 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org.
A voice in the wilderness of American evangelicalism. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
In 1521, at the Diet of Worms, Martin Luther was asked to recant his writings. Luther responded, "Unless I am convinced from the sacred scriptures that I am in error, I cannot and will not recant. Here I stand. I cannot do otherwise. God help me." Will you stand with us as we proclaim these Reformation truths into the 21st century? You can take your stand by becoming a monthly contributor to Issues, Etc. To find out how you can become a confessor, an apologist, or a reformer, check out page 8 of the latest Issues, Etc. journal, or visit our website, issuesetc.org. Click on the What's New section. Help us proclaim the solas of the Reformation, grace, faith, scripture, for the sake of Christ alone. Here we stand, Issues, Etc., and you. Welcome back to Issues, Etc. Our subject, classical education, with Pastor Joel Brondos. Joel, before the break, Daryl was on the line. He gave us a little bit of kind of his longitude and latitude there in Kansas. And while I don't expect you have an encyclopedic knowledge of where a classical school might be, what kind of advice would you give to Daryl, who's run up against, well, his kids have hit the limit of parochial school there, and they would like to find a classical school?
Yeah, that's perhaps the question I get asked most frequently, and there is a growing interest of people around the country who want this kind of thing when they find out about it. And there are also schools that are saying, where can we find teachers who will teach this way? I think the best thing to do is come to our conference, for example, and to network with people. We also have an email list that people can share ideas and resources and ask questions. And by all means, I think you have an email address for me on the website. I love to answer people's questions and to make connections if I ever can. But I know that there is a Lutheran school, St. John's in Topeka, that have sent teachers to our conference. And so they're interested in it. I'm not sure that it's probably a little ways away. I don't know my Kansas geography as well as I ought, but I think you're both kind of on the eastern part of the state, eastern half of the state. But I would say, by all means, email me, and hopefully we can just network. If you can't come to the conference, or if you can't help pay for a teacher to come to the conference, then at least do some networking on the email side.
Daryl, and I will add this, I am certain that you are not the only parent in that position somewhere there in Kansas. There are other Kansas residents who certainly are in the same position, probably can help you, and that networking is of vital importance. Now is a good time to call. We've freed up a few phone lines here. 1-800-730-2727. 1-800-730-2727. Your questions and comments on classical education. Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Up next from Springfield, Missouri, Ted is on the line. Ted, welcome.
Hi, I just had a question. I'm about to begin a career in public school teaching, and I was really curious as to how I could incorporate at least aspects of a classical education into secondary public school teaching, social studies in particular, but anything really.
That's a very good question. In fact, I imagine, Joel, that's where a lot of teachers are. They can't have the model in the entire school curriculum, but they'd like to put it into their classroom where they can.
Sure. I would say that it would be very important to make sure that you get some languages. Classical languages are nice just because of the topics that they cover as well. But make sure that you're not just taking a bunch of methods classes, and try to emphasize the particular subject areas that you want to teach. I think that a lot of teachers go into studying literature, but you need to make sure you have a good grasp of math and science as well. Try to take a philosophy class or two if you can. Take a class on argumentation and rhetoric if you're able. Also, it's great to be able to, one thing that a lot of our teachers' colleges don't do anymore is to have a class on the history of education. I think you'd find that very fascinating if you could take that early on.
Ted, hang on the line there, and we'll connect with you. I'm going to send you a copy of Classical Education Toward the Revival of American Schooling. 1-800-730-2727. Bill calls from Tomo, Wisconsin. Bill, welcome.
Hi.
Hi, Bill.
Okay, I thought I went off. My question is, why has our country and our culture or whatever gone away from classical education over the last couple hundred years?
That's a huge question, Bill. Well, let's see if you can give us a thumbnail sketch, Pastor Brandos, on how we have fallen so far in education today.
Well, I think it has a lot to do with a European influence coming from some of the philosophies that were taught, especially in Prussia. I think there's a book by John Taylor Gatto that gets into this quite a bit, and it's not from a classical perspective so much as just an educational philosophy perspective. I think our country has gone through several different movements, pragmatism, and some of the postmodernism that you may hear about, and that's affected every aspect of our economics and work schedule and so forth. And I think it's very important for us to get grounded in a classical education again, because a lot of manufacturing type jobs and the industry age is passing, and we're in an information age, and people have to be able to be adaptable, and that means they can't just learn one thing. They have to have a broad perspective of education so that they can make these changes in life.
Timothy calls from St. Louis. Timothy, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hi. I have a question. It could be a little bit digressive. I'm from Nigeria. Here is a culture that thrives on freedom, and a culture wherein you have lots of politicians who are Christians. Can they enact some rule or some way to introduce Christian religion to the academic system? And secondly, wouldn't it be okay if they give more freedom to churches or to organizations to create academic programs that will reflect religious sound beliefs?
Timothy, two good questions. Pastor Brandos, your response to both of them. He begins by asking, can we by law bring some of these elements, and he mentioned Christian education, into our academic system?
Well, I'm afraid with groups like the ACLU, they really don't want to permit us to do that, but I think it just behooves churches to do it with the gifts that they have of families that want to love and support education in this way. The whole interaction between government and church is a very interesting one, but I don't think that we have too much hope to help our educational system out, as it were, per se, following those lines.
But now, he also asks about the freedom afforded churches to develop their own academic systems. Does that already exist?
Well, in a sense it does, but quite frankly, I don't think it really applies too much, because many of the church schools that exist today want to be state accredited. They are able to get money this way for textbooks or whatever, but by being state accredited, that means they also have to follow the curriculum that is determined by the state. And to some extent, too, they have to teach, unfortunately, towards the test. If they don't get good test scores on the state tests, then they have problems keeping up that accreditation. As well as, it's a very fascinating subject as well about how teachers' licenses are continuing. That's all changing now quite a bit, because teachers no longer, if they want to keep their license, just take classes on subject matter, but they have to prove in a more of a subjective way that they are being successful. And so all of that is coming under question right now. But I'd say that churches and church schools that want to be state accredited don't have quite the freedom of being able to do what is good, right, and salutary. However, I think at the same time, if you were to take a look at some Ivy League grammar schools, that they're not terribly interested in what the government has to say. They're going to do what's good, right, and salutary, that's something that's worked over the centuries, and keep on doing it.
Joel, with only 20 seconds here before our break, is classical education a uniquely Christian entity? Is it merely a Christian entity?
It is not just a Christian entity. As we've seen from non-Christians like Quintilian and Cicero and others over the years, so it's something that can be used throughout the culture in all times, but the Christian aspect has a proper understanding of what it means to be human and what our ultimate goals are in eternal life and the righteousness of God in Christ Jesus.
Pastor Joel Brondos is our guest. We're talking about classical education. He is headmaster-elect of St. Paul's Lutheran Church and School in Brookfield, Illinois. He spent 9 years as the headmaster of Zion Lutheran Academy in Fort Wayne, Indiana. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation on this subject. I've got a lot of questions left over from the first hour. We'll get into them right after this. Listen to this prayer from Martin Luther. Dear Lord, you know that I cannot come before you on account of my own self, my presumption, my worthiness. I would not even know how I might begin to pray. Nevertheless, I do come before you because you have commanded it, and you earnestly encourage that we should call upon you. That is but one part of but one prayer in our Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for June, a Lutheran Book of Prayer. The book is $8.99 plus shipping and handling. For this devotional resource, call 1-800-325-3040 and ask for a Lutheran Book of Prayer, the Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for June. 1-800-325-3040. For more information on the book, go to our website, issuesetc.org. Right there on the homepage, you'll find a Lutheran Book of Prayer, the Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for June.
The radio voice of the Lutheran faith for the 21st century. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Todd Wilkin here again. I'm talking with Dr. Alvin Schmidt. He's going to be one of the speakers at a Confessional Christian Worldview seminar, June the 26th through July the 2nd, at the Schwann Center in Trago, Wisconsin. Dr. Schmidt, you're going to be speaking about Islam. How great a threat is Islam to Western civilization?
Probably a very big threat, and let me just give you a few examples. It is advocating certain things in its religion. For example, liberty and justice are very, very different among Muslims. And as they gain power, that influence is going to affect Western culture. For example, Christian influence removed the Lex Talionis principle, or an eye for an eye or tooth for a tooth, which is still very much present in the Sharia law of Islam. Slavery is another example. Slavery has been outlawed in the West, in the United States, back in the late 1800s. in England in 1833 and throughout the British Empire. Slavery, however, still in existence in a number of Islamic countries. Moreover, Islam sees nothing wrong with slavery. It's advocated in the Quran. Marriage or monogamy may very well be affected because Islam allows a man up to 4 wives at one time. In addition to that, he, a given man, may have some concubines. Now, we know from Western culture has very much been influenced by Christianity, and so we have laws of monogamy, not polygamy or polygyny, whatever, however you want to use it. Also, sexual morality may very well be affected. We are already a rather licentious society. But in Islam, for example, the Quran sees woman very much as a sex object. In the second chapter of the Quran, Surah 2, it talks about the woman being a field in which a man plows, a very, well, I don't know what you want to call it, graphic picture of using woman in a sexual manner or the sexual object. Even the sanctity of life may be altered or in some way affected. In Islam, the body is only sacred if you are an Islamic person. If you deny Allah or are an unbeliever or an infidel, the person's life is expendable. And so these are just some of the things that I can see in the future as Islam gains in population in Western Europe, even in this country, will very much affect the, or have an impact on our culture.
For more information about a Confessional Christian Worldview seminar, June the 26th through July the 2nd, at the Schwann Center in Trago, Wisconsin, 6 nights lodging, all meals provided, at a cost starting at $400, go to our website, issuesetc.org, and look for the Schwann Center logo, or call the Schwann Center at 1-800-577-4848.
Dr. Carl Fekincher of Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, on good reasons to become a pastor.
Before I went to the seminary, I worked in business for a number of years, and I enjoyed very much what I was doing, but I realized that the aspects of my jobs that I appreciated the most certainly were the opportunities to be helpful and encouraging and supportive of the people who worked with me. And it was quite clear to me, without any question, that the way I could be most helpful to them was sharing the good news of Jesus Christ, their Savior. And I realized that if I became a pastor, that would be what I'd do all the time, and I would never be restricted in any way in what I could say. The help that I could bring to people that I cared about would be the help that was not just for today or tomorrow, but eternal.
To schedule an on-campus visit at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, call 1-800-481-2155.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Our call-in number as we talk about classical education, 1-800-730-2727, 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org. We are giving away copies of this book. This is probably one of the best primers on classical education, Toward the Revival of American Schooling, by Dr. Gene Edward Veith and Andrew Kern. We'll be giving away copies of this book to our best callers and emailers, issuesetc@kfuo.org, or 1-800-730-2727. We have a few free phone lines. Our guest pastor, Joel Brondos, is headmaster-elect of St. Paul's Lutheran Church and School in Brookfield, Illinois. A little later this summer, they're going to be holding a classical Lutheran education conference, June the 27th, that's when it begins, at St. Paul's Lutheran Church and School in Brookfield, Illinois. For more information, go to our website, issuesetc.org. Click on the What's New section, or you can call them direct, area code 708-485-0650, 708-485-0650. Ask about a classical Lutheran education, June the 27th through July the 1st, at St. Paul Lutheran Church in Brookfield, Illinois. For more information, you can also go to our website and check out that What's New section, issuesetc.org. Let's talk with Carrie in Minneapolis. Carrie, welcome to Issues Etc.
Hello.
Hi, Carrie.
How are you?
Very well.
Great. My question is, I wonder if the classical education system has homework for children in third and fourth and fifth and sixth grade. a little concerned because our good private Christian school that we send our third grader to has homework already in third grade, and it just seems like a lot. They're at school for 6.5 hours, and they come home and have to do homework or monthly projects and things. And it gets to be a lot. It's almost like demanding such. So I'm just wondering if classical education also has a lot of homework when you go to a classical school.
Kari, thank you for calling, and thank you for listening as well. Pastor Brandos, homework is a big question. What about for those earlier grades?
We do have sort of a rule of thumb that we like to use, and that's about 10 minutes of homework per grade level. So a third grader would have 3 times 10 minutes, hopefully no more than half an hour of homework a night. Probably spend more time talking about why we have homework. It's just sort of an extra chance to review what's been learned during the day, to reinforce it, and also it's sometimes a great parent-child activity to grow together. But it depends on the child, too. Some children have a way of fidgeting and make a half hour's worth of homework turn into 2 hours as well. But that's just sort of a rule of thumb we like to use. And really, I agree, there should not be an excessive amount of homework.
This is Jeff from Frisco, Texas. He writes this via email. So many people who claim to be classical educators seem not to understand the nature of their own method. They view classical education as its own context, as a thing in itself rather than a tool, the best tool, to get to the contexts of academic disciplines. The trivium you mentioned before, Pastor Brandos, allows us to reach farther into what is true and beautiful, but it isn't a magic wand which one can wave and cover a lack of cultural context, teacher preparation, parental support. I am a Christian school teacher, and I've encountered many who hold this perspective. How can we utilize this God-given method of education without buying into the quote-unquote classical fad which seems to emerge in so many schools? Asks Jeff. Your response.
Well, I agree that there, first of all, that there is a kind of a classical fad. It might be the kind of thing that people refer to as being elitist. Sometimes it's maybe best not even to use the word classical because it carries some baggage or some kind of ideas with people that may not be accurate. Maybe you can restate the question for me a little bit because I don't have it written there in front of me. But
well, I think what he's worried about is, number one, people who view this, the method, the trivium, the grammar, the logic, the rhetoric, as a magic wand to kind of cover all sins of education. And number two, his concern that classical education be viewed as a tool and not an end in itself.
All right, right, absolutely. That I would say the content is the important thing. It's, again, it's not just the method, not just the skills, but it's the content. And that content is never just an end in itself, like you've learned this subject and you never have to come back to it again. But it's a living, growing thing that's related to so many different subjects. So I would say, I'm not sure if I'm familiar with the kind of education that he's talking about or teachers who have done things that way. I'd like to know more about that so people don't fall into the same kind of trap.
Here's something I'm curious about, Joel, and that is we, as parents, you have, I'm certain, every parent has, we've all said it ourselves as young students, why do I need to learn this? And I've been stumped a number of times when that question comes up during homework. And in a previous conversation with you on classical education, it became apparent to me that sometimes we can talk to our children and our students about these subjects, math and history and science and theology, as goods in themselves. They're something that it is good to know. It doesn't necessarily have to have, can I go out and make $50,000 a year knowing this?
Right. And from one perspective, too, youngsters don't have as broad a perspective on life to know what will serve them well or not. So we may be teaching them things on one perspective that will come in handy in life, but they don't necessarily know when or how they will use it. But another perspective, it's just like in basketball or some other sport where the coach tells the kids that they have to do sit-ups and push-ups. Nobody they complain about having to do the work, perhaps, but they don't say, well, why do I have to do this? I just want to play basketball. Those exercises, even though you'd never do anything like a push-up during a game in basketball, perhaps, or a sit-up, unless you've been knocked on the floor, I suppose. But we do these exercises to help build our abilities to learn more and to organize more. So with classical education, again, it's not just learning stuff, but it's doing it in an organized way to expose us to a lot of different things so that when something happens, maybe unexpectedly, we'll be able to have a ground or a foundation to work with on that.
We've had a lot of questions from our listeners about making a transition to a classical model, but before you can make a transition, you got to make the case for a classical model of education. How would you make the case to a school board on why to use a classical education model?
Well, I think probably the case would be made by giving some examples and stories of children who have succeeded in this area. I love to tell the story about how when we made the transition, a lot of exciting stories, I guess, but for example, we use something called the Shirley Grammar Method that uses little jingles like a sentence, sentence, sentence is complete, 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 when five simple rules, it meets, meets, meets. And the children, by the end of third grade, can diagram or identify all the principal parts of speech in a sentence. You could write any sentence on the board that you want to, and they could do that. When we demonstrated that at a PTL meeting early on in the year, and the parents were just amazed that the children could do this at third and fourth grade already, and that they could learn the building blocks of language at the grammar stage in that way. Another example my wife likes to tell about reading a book called Paddle to the Sea, it's a brief summary of the storyline is that this character is going down the St. Lawrence Seaway, getting to the ocean, It's a longer story. It's a little bit more difficult for third graders. But instead of reading these little snippets of stories, the children so identified with the main character that when there was a description of the open ocean for their first time, the children spontaneously got out of their chairs and cheered. And my wife had never, ever experienced anything like this with students before. So I think some of those experiences and cases can go a long way at showing parents and Board of Education members what a wonderful thing this is.
This really wouldn't be a complete conversation on the classical model without a brief discussion of Latin. We've talked a lot about the classics of Western literature and being exposed to them in English translation. Why is Latin so often a major feature in classical education?
Well, I think there are several reasons, and I think that they are very practical reasons. In fact, that the number of students taking Latin since the 1980s has tripled in U.S. schools. One very practical aspect is that our own English language, the roots of many of the best words, over 50% of them, come from Latin roots. When we also see how much Latin is used in the medical field, in science fields, in law, just gives a broad perspective, but then also the topics and the history that are brought in with Latin, which is seen everywhere. I mean, you can find Latin on the back of a dollar bill. If you've ever watched The Matrix, Latin appears up on the a sign on one of the walls in one of the scenes. If you watch Harry Potter, Latin is used in these incantations, which we don't necessarily recommend, but children can recognize those things if they've learned them, so that it really opens up a broad perspective and a lot of different areas for children. And even then, these little sayings like tempus fugit, time flies, they learn some content along with the Latin that they study.
We're talking with Pastor Joel Brondos about classical education. I will never forget visiting for a chapel service, a classical academy here in the St. Louis area. I walked in. The children were singing. They were in uniforms. We'll talk about uniforms on the other side of the break. But they were standing in their chapel, singing together the school song. Many schools have a song. It didn't sound like the Illini fight song, I can guarantee you that. They were singing, children from kindergarten through the sixth grade, together their school song in Latin. Very impressive, and the children didn't think it unusual at all. We'll be right back. Stay tuned.
Contending for Truth in an Age of Anti-Truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Hi, this is Todd Wilkin, inviting you to join Issues Etc. regular guests Gene Edward Veith, Alvin Schmidt, and Angus Manoj for a Confessional Christian Worldview Seminar June the 26th through July the 2nd at the Marvin M. Schwann Retreat and Conference Center in Trago, Wisconsin. Dr. Veith's topic will be the new polytheism. Dr. Schmidt will share his expertise on Islam's threat to the West, and the purpose of science will be led by Dr. Manoj. A Confessional Christian Worldview Seminar is the perfect retreat for Issues Etc. fans. For more information, call the Schwann Center at 1-800-577-4848 or check out our website, issuesetc.org, and look for the Schwann Center logo on our homepage, issuesetc.org. A Confessional Christian Worldview Seminar, June the 26th through July the 2nd at the Schwann Center in northern Wisconsin. 1-800-577-4848. We still have about 15 minutes left for your phone calls and your emails, 1-800-730-2727, as we talk about classical education. The email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org, issuesetc@kfuo.org. What is the deal with uniforms? I have noticed that schools across the board, even though they may have no interest whatsoever in a classical model, are kind of looking cosmetically more classic, because so many are going back to uniforms. What role does that play, if any, in a classical education?
Well, I don't think it makes children learn any better necessarily, but it can very easily take their minds off of their clothing as a distraction. There are some children who can afford $200 pairs of tennis shoes and others who can't. And there's always the question, too, about what kind of dress is appropriate. All those things are taken care of very easily with school uniforms. Plus, it just looks very nice. We have here at Zion, a Zion polo shirt. They can either wear white or red, and then they wear navy blue pants up until 7th and 8th grade when they have a little more variety and they can wear khaki pants. But whenever they go out on a field trip, like to a ballet or a concert somewhere, we have dress ties, and when they go out into the community, they look sharp, and when people see them coming, they know something, someone special's in the area.
Talk about the classical model of education, and especially about the teaching of Christian theology as the queen of the sciences.
Well, you know, we know from the scriptures, answer to the question, what does it profit a man if he gains the whole world but loses his soul? First and foremost, our life with God in Christ is the most important thing. And nothing else matters if we don't have that. And so in a classical education, we want to teach our children to properly distinguish between law and gospel. And now I would encourage parents, if they're going to enroll their children at a Christian school, one of the first things they should ask the administrator or the teachers is, what is the distinction between law and gospel? If that question can't be answered properly, you ought to have second thoughts, because there's just as much damage that can be done by a confusion of law and gospel than any other kind of educational trend. Catechesis in the Lutheran schools, I think, is some of us are familiar with Martin Luther's Small Catechism, and then the other Christian questions and answers that were added many years later. But it's a simple dialogue back and forth. A question is asked, and here's the kind of response that ought to be given. Luther thought that pedagogically it was good to teach a certain way of saying things in a very simple way and stick to that formula. Classical understanding that repetition is the mother of learning and memory, that Luther bought into as well. So we want to be able to teach those things in a way that's going to stick with children. They may not understand everything. They learn things by heart in the younger grades, which they may not completely understand. That doesn't bother us. But as they grow up, these things are unpacked for them, and they have them their whole life long.
So a classical Christian education is as much about Christian formation And you use the term discipline. I think a very biblical word there as well in what Christians ought to know. Christ has commanded not only to make disciples, but to teach them to observe everything I have commanded you.
Right, to teach them to observe all things. And the best way to teach all things is to do it in an organized, disciplined way.
Someone might balk at the idea of memorization. And that was probably at the heart of much of my misadventures in education as a kid. Memorization was considered to be rote, bad, formal, unproductive, until my dad very wisely pointed out to me one time by asking, "What's your phone number?" And I gave it to him, and he said, "You memorized that, didn't you?" "Yes." "What's your address?" "You memorized that, didn't you?" "What's your name? What are your brother's name?" Every piece of useful information, he said, you have ever learned has been memorized. And suddenly I thought, hey, maybe it's not such a bad thing after all.
Right. And once we have that groundwork, we want to have everything just learned by rote memory. But that sets the foundation for so many other things. And it's just wonderful. I think sometimes the difficulty for us is we try to teach memory too late. It's important to start teaching memory as young as we can get the kids. Teach them a song. Teach them how to memorize things with a poem. Teach them how to memorize things in a way that's fun to do. And they don't really think about it as a problem in the younger ages, but it's more difficult once they start getting to junior high school.
Someone else might say, "Pastor Brandos, I love the basic concept here, but I'm worried about the content. I'm worried about the classics of Western literature going back so far that we're really looking at, say, Greek philosophy and Roman history and altogether pagan worldview in these various classics of Western literature that may not be right for Christian education. How would you argue for the incorporation of these things, if you would, into a classical Christian education?"
Well, I think Luther himself, those questions didn't bother him at all. He thought we should be well-read in everything. Partly to understand the world in the sense of being able to relate to it and communicate law and gospel to the world. But it's so very important, first and foremost, to have that solid grounding in law and gospel, the theology of the cross, and how the gospel is our life and salvation, to be well grounded in that before we start wandering around in some of these other things. Luther didn't want us spending a whole lot of time in philosophy, but it is important to have some basic understanding of those things. So I would say it's good to be well-read in a wide variety of things. And we, that issue comes up sometimes when we teach mythology, for example. Are the kids going to be misled by hearing stories about gods like Zeus and all the rest? And they don't. They understand the distinction between mythology and false gods and the one true God in Jesus Christ, who forgives us our sins and gives us life.
It seems to me that a classical model of education might be countercultural in two ways, not only in the culture where there is a dearth of critical thinking, but also in the church where there is an equal, if not greater, dearth of critical thinking. What do you think, Pastor Brando?
I think that's very true, both in, you know, one very practical way is when we see what happens with preaching, when it becomes just a long discussion about how the law is to be obeyed. It's not terribly interesting, and it's not edifying. In fact, it can be just downright boring. I think I can tell a pastor who is well-read, who has a liberal arts education, and keeps up with it, that preaching. But also, it takes some work to be able to listen and to hear and to understand these things. So it's just a very practical aspect in life of the church as well.
Pastor Joel Brandos is headmaster-elect of St. Paul Lutheran Church and School in Brookfield, Illinois. Pastor Brandos, thank you very much for being our guest.
Well, it's a pleasure, and I just want to encourage people to email me if they have questions. I love to be able to dialogue, and I also know what it's like to be at KFUO working late at night, because I used to be there till 2 a.m. when I was a student engineer there.
I don't have to stay that late. Thank you very much for being our guest. St. Paul Brookfield, Illinois is going to be hosting a classical education conference later this month. For more information on this vital resource for you, our listeners, check out the What's New section of our website, issuesetc.org. To find out how to contact our guest, Pastor Joel Brondos, or to help support the worldwide outreach of Issues, etc., by making a tax-deductible gift, call our resource line, 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172, or write us at Issues, etc., Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. That's Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117.